This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. My co-host, Meghna Chakrabarty, is on assignment today. Boston's Gay Pride Parade is tomorrow, and while the weather doesn't look great, the outlook for gay rights in the country has never been sunnier. In the coming weeks, the U.S. Supreme Court will issue its two major decisions on same-sex marriage rights, and that's just the latest development in what's been an extraordinary few years for the gay rights movement. Same-sex marriage is becoming legal in more and more places. Gays can now serve openly in the military. And public opinion on gay issues has swung dramatically in their favor, with younger Americans overwhelmingly driving the change. In an article last Sunday, the Boston Globe's Leon Nifok laid out a thesis that we'll explore today, that Boston played a big role in laying a lot of the intellectual groundwork for the gay rights movement. And joining me now is Neil Miller, who's been involved in gay rights issues for decades, including a stint as an editor of the Gay Community News, the first weekly gay publication in the country. He's a professor at Tufts University and the author of several books, including In Search of Gay America and Banned in Boston, The Watch and Ward Society's Crusade Against Books, Burlesque, and the Social Evil. And Neil Miller, welcome back to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Anthony.
So New York and San Francisco are the cities most associated with the gay rights movement. Where does Boston fit in from those early days?
When we think of the early days of the gay movement, we often think, you know, of the Stonewall riots in New York, which started the whole thing off. We think about San Francisco, which became its own kind of gay center and was the place that every gay person wanted to move. But Boston, interestingly enough, in terms of the gay rights movement, played a very important role. I was the editor of the Gay Community News, which was a weekly paper starting off in the 1970s, and it really was the gay newspaper of record. Boston also was the place where we had Elaine Noble was elected an openly lesbian state representative in 1974, which was really a trailblazing move, long before anything like that happened in San Francisco or New York. We developed a lot of institutions in Boston, Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, GLAAD, which
of course play a big role in a lot of the litigation we're seeing today.
And a huge role in gay marriage in recent years. There was an early gay community health center. There was a medical center, a community center. When Edmund White, the gay novelist, he did a book in which he traveled around the country, and he called Boston a talk shop. And I think he was referring to the fact that in a lot of ways it was the kind of the intellectual center, if you will, of the early gay movement.
Well, you mentioned the publication of the Gay Community News, which played a major role in Boston and national movements. And at one point, it boasted so many alumni that they were called the GCN Mafia, right?
Right. And they wound up in different... Irvashi Vade became the head of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. Kevin Cathcart, another GCN Mafia member, became the head of Lambda Legal Defense in New York. Richard Burns became the head of the New York Gay Community Center. It's almost like it was
a real incubator, it sounds like.
Incubator, or the farm team for the gay movement, as the Boston Globe put it.
Interesting. There was also cooperation between gay and lesbian groups in Boston that didn't exist in other places. Talk about why that was important.
Yeah, that was really an interesting aspect of it, because in the early 70s particularly, feminism was on the rise and it played a very important role in Boston. There was lesbian separatism. Gay men and lesbians just had different goals, different objectives. And in Boston, at the Gay Community News, for example, we really worked hard. There were men and women on staff. We worked hard to cover gay and lesbian issues, and that just wasn't true of the gay press, for example, in the rest of the country. And a lot of these institutions here really worked hard at men and women working together. And yeah, why it happened here, I don't know. We're just, you know, better than anywhere else.
There you go.
I don't know.
Well, all kinds of, so you mentioned successful gay rights groups started in Boston. Other groups had their origins here too, including the very controversial North American Man-Boy Love Association.
They did.
So tell us, I mean, for people who don't know a whole lot about that, talk about that.
NAMBLA, one of the most reviled organizations in the country, their main aim was to get rid of the age of consent for any kind of sex. And I guess to go back to the ancient Greek model, if you will. And they really... It posed sort of a problem for the gay movement because, you know, like, we didn't really want to be associated with these people.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, they would sort of make the argument, well, you know, people are being oppressed in the same way as gay people. I don't know. It did start here. What can I say? It never went anywhere.
Right.
And I guess you could say it's kind of a blemish on Boston, if you will.
Well, the article that we mentioned by Leon Neifach says that gay activism in 1970s Boston really was a prototype for the broader gay movement, for what the broader gay movement would later become. How is that so?
Right. Well, I think we were really pushing for legislative change. That was one thing. We were setting up a lot of institutions. You know, in other cities, San Francisco was a big party town, if you will. And New York was, I think, it's always been a place where people go to succeed in whatever fields they're, you know, if they want to make it to the top of their field. But Boston was sort of different in that sense. And I do think it sort of incubated.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting. Massachusetts was the first state where gay marriage became legal. It was the second state where anti-discrimination legislation passed. The first was Wisconsin, oddly enough. So I think you can see that a lot of the groundwork kind of paid off here.
Mm-hmm.
And those gay mafioso that we talked about who were off in different parts of the country sort of brought that message. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I don't know, if you looked at a gay pride parade in New York or San Francisco, they're really flamboyant occasions. And Boston, they were really boring. I mean, you know, maybe it's a little different these days. I don't want to discourage people from going
well,
to
this. Well, let me conclude by asking this question today. I mean, as Boston celebrates Boston Pride in 2013, is there an end game in sight for gay rights in the U.S.? That is, you know, how far are we from the time when these groups will no longer be necessary, that we've reached full equality?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, African-Americans thought that the election of a black president was endgame. It doesn't seem to have been. I think we've got a long way to go. And I think we have to realize that we're thinking of this from the perch of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of parts of the country where it's still really tough to be gay, where gay relationships are certainly not recognized, where there's a lot of discrimination, a lot of fear. And I think it's going to take a while for that to happen. But then again, we've really seen immense progress.
So a lot of progress, but a lot more distance to travel. Neil Miller, he's an English professor at Tufts University, author of several books, including In Search of Gay America, Women and Men in a Time of Change. Neil Miller, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony. My pleasure.
Stay with us. Coming up, singer Aoife O'Donovan. Let me say it again. Singer Aoife O'Donovan joins us live in the studio. Stick with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.